When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Happy Monday. Hope you guys had a good Easter, a good holiday weekend. Anyway, today is a great episode with a dog owner struggling with not only one, not only two, but three different dogs. She has two Rottweilers and a German Shepherd and a Siberian Husky puppy on the way. So as you guys right now are probably listening, you're like, whoa, boy, rolling your eyes and trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Well, this is like the best client to work with. This is like the best type of dog owner that I can work with, is they are completely just like, hey, I'm crazy, but I need to figure this out. What can I do to get better? And aren't we all? So this is a good podcast. It kind of unrolls. The coffee hits halfway through, so it unrolls and then speeds up, probably for you guys listening anyway. So anyway, she's going over dogs that are fighting and dogs that are out of control, and she knows that she's at fault. And so this is how to rebuild your relationship. This is also the reason why a lot of dogs get put down, and the reason why dogs get rehomed, and the reason why dogs end up the way that they do. And so it's just a good podcast, and it kind of unrolls a lot of different things and peels off a lot of different layers. And it's just a normal dog owner trying to just be a great dog owner, loves dogs, but she knows that she's loving them too much and she's set herself up for failure and she's trying to get out of it. So I think it's going to be great for you guys to listen. And there's some things in here that I haven't said before that kind of came out naturally that I think you'll find really helpful. So
is this Tom?
This is. Go ahead. So you have...
The two-year-old Roddy is the one. What he's been in training since he was 7 weeks old. I did, you know, puppy preschool and the whole bit. And then he went in when he was 3 months old for a 2-week boarding training session.
Yep. When he was 3 months?
Yes.
Okay.
And when he came out, he was a very fearful dog. And he actually has been in training ever since then. You know, we found a different trainer and have worked with him. He is excellent as far as being leash trained. He does his heel. He does all of his commands. And his problem is aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point that the vet said that he's the most dangerous dog she has in the practice, which is not a good thing.
Right.
And he frequently, and I'd say daily, growls at my husband. He's very, very protective. And I don't know why he growls at my husband, except he always does it if my husband approaches me and I'm right next to the dog. Fritz has never been aggressive toward me, but he definitely has with my husband. And we recently found out that he gets aggressive if my husband tries to correct the 9-month-old pup, Rottweiler's puppy.
Mm-hmm.
He just goes nuts. Also, one of the problems I have is if anybody comes to the front door, he goes what I call Cujo on them. I mean, he just goes insane. And, you know, I'm not quite sure how to solve that. I just ordered an e-collar for him, and I had some questions about that, and also about the prong collar.
Okay.
The prong collar I have is obviously not the one that you recommend. Because the one you recommended began with an H.
Well, Herm Springer makes the prong collar that I recommend. But the prong collar is just...
What's the name of it?
Herm Springer.
Herm Springer.
Yeah, it's a German company that makes all sorts of different equipment for all sorts of... They make boating equipment, horse equipment, dog training equipment, and... Herm Springer is just the company. The prong collar is the product.
Yeah. Well, and I got that from your video.
So which one do you have then?
I have one from Pet People, and it has no quick release or anything else on it.
Okay.
So obviously I need, because you had told one of your clients that they needed to have a prong collar on the dog, you know, at all times when he's awake or she, and that's to be used also with the e-collar, correct?
I don't think so. So I don't typically tell people to leave the prong collar on all the time, just when you're training, because it's just a training collar for the leash. So whenever the leash is going to be on and you're going to be using the prong collar with the leash, that's when it should be on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. I don't.
So if I'm using the e-collar, mm-hmm. I don't need to have the prong collar.
You can. They're two different things, though. The leash is going to be attached to your prong collar for handling outside or inside, and then Your e-collar is a completely separate off-leash tool. So it'd be the difference between a ladder and a screwdriver. They're both tools for two different jobs.
Okay. And as far as the e-collar, one of the videos I watched with you, you use a pulse, right?
Yeah, there's a continuous function on the remote collar, yes.
And it's not actually shocking. It's just doing a buzz, right?
No, it's a stimulation, so you have to define shocking. So shocking typically to most people is correcting the dog where they have high intensity levels, where the dog hates it, and it's shocking to them. I don't like using that word because I use it on dogs all the time, and it doesn't shock them at all.
Okay.
It's called e-collar stimulation.
Okay. And I think that's wonderful. I have mm-hmm. no problem with that. We have 5 acres of woods here.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have control over, you know, where the dogs go.
Yeah, for sure.
And the e-collar is perfect for that.
Yeah, definitely.
But what do I do about the front door situation?
So the front door situation is a lot of different variables. So you have 3 different dogs. Are all of them going crazy at the door, or just Fritz?
Excuse me. Fritz is, and now the puppy, Teddy, is following suit.
Right. So you got to, what type of obedience control do you have over on Fritz?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to get another prong collar. And I just got the e-collar.
Yeah.
So I've got to start working with him with the e-collar.
Yeah. Well, the e-collar, yeah. So your obedience has to be good first, because this isn't just going to go away.
Right.
So you have to do obedience to counter this behavior. So without good obedience, you're not going to be able to get to that point. So you have to go back to the very basics in the beginning of handling your dog. Because right now you don't have good communication with your dog. So if you can't ask your dog to do different things, or if you can't get your dog to do different things for you and with you, then you're not going to be able to do anything with the dog. It doesn't matter if you want them to come back. It doesn't matter if you want them to stop barking. It doesn't matter if you want them to start pulling. You don't have any obedience or communication with the dog yet. So that's where you have to start.
Okay, well, he is extremely obedient on the leash with his commands. So should I keep him on a leash?
Yeah, in the beginning. What type of commands are you doing?
I do sit, stay, down. I'm trying to think of what else. I can walk around holding the leash loosely without him moving. He'll go into a heel and then sit if I stop. He's just very, very obedient on the leash.
Okay. Now, what do you want? So say somebody comes into the house, right? Somebody knocks on the door. What do you want him to do?
I want him to lay down and not act like he's going to eat him.
Okay. And so he's barking, lunging, freaking out?
Oh, yeah. And full fangs and yeah.
Okay. So when you say you want him to stop, I'm trying to get granular on you and try to figure out exactly what you want him to do. So when he's reacting the way that he does, yeah, what exactly, other than stop trying to eat the person, what do you want him to do?
I want him to go to a place and not react.
Okay. Does he have a place command?
No.
Okay. So that's the first part you're going to start working on.
Okay.
Right? So somebody comes to the door, and this is why I'm walking through this with you, is somebody comes to the door.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets reactive. He's a Rottweiler getting reactive, right? And then the other dogs start to, chime in a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then you got the other dogs starting to go off. He's going off. And then you want him to do something he doesn't know. So that's the first thing you got to start working on, is you have to ask yourself, what do I want Fritz to do? If I want him to go do something, regardless of if it's a place or it's a downstay or it's a leave it or you know, whatever you want your dog to do, and really in any circumstance, you have to really ask yourself and audit yourself, how much does your dog know that particular thing?
Yeah.
Right? So if they don't know that particular thing that well, then A, you're never going to be successful, and B, you're always going to be kind of frustrated with what's going on. So you have to teach him how to place first at a very, 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 very introductory level, which means nobody else in the room, nothing going on. It's you, it's him, it's a place command, and it's a reward.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go through and teach him how to place for 3 to 4 days, you know, on and off, you know, throughout the day.
Okay.
And that's
how long should I do the place for?
Like how long should he stay, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I think it's a good question. It depends. If you want to keep breaking it down, it really depends on when you break the dog. So whenever I particularly work with a dog, I teach them any behavior I teach them, I also pair with a break so the dog understands what break is. So if I say heel and then I say break, so break is you don't have to do it anymore. Break is be a dog, you can go on your break. Or downstay and then break. All those things are all things that you can do. But basically the answer is it's on your terms. If you want the dog to stay there for as long as you want, whatever. But in the beginning, you got to think, you got to go very micro. You have to go very small steps and then work your way up. So that's up to you. You have to start building that.
That makes perfect sense. And is it always the same place at all the time?
No, it doesn't have to be the same place. It can be anything really that's just different than the ground. So you can use anything. I always like to teach dogs how to place on several different things. So you could teach him how to place on a bed. You could teach him how to place on a rug. You could teach him how to place on a yoga mat. You could teach him how to place on a couch, whatever. It doesn't matter. But that's how you do it. But you have to teach him that when you go over and you kind of point and use your direction over here and you say, hey, place on this, that's what the dog has to know. But the dog has to know it really well first before okay. you can even think about introducing it while there's distractions. And that's where a lot go ahead.
I assume I have to run through the paces with him.
Correct.
You know, with heel and everything else, and then introduce place.
Yep. Well, you can introduce it the way I typically honestly like to introduce it to the dog in like a very, I don't know how to explain it, but what I would do is get the dog on the leash, just like the regular leash that you have, right?
Yes.
And then you would send the dog to the place and then the stay and then the place and then the stay and then the break. And you would kind of like, you would make it very, very, very different each time as you go. So what I like to do is get the dog in a place, get your treats or whatever, or get your dog in a leash, and you'd say Fritz place, and you'd send him over there and you'd pay him, and you'd send him over, and then you say break, and then you send him over again, and then you'd pay him. So you have to have good handling skills to really teach him these things to a point where he really understands it. And this is where this is where your body comes in. This is where your leash pressure comes in. This is where your voice inflection comes in. All of these different things kind of come into play when you're, it's the same thing as like learning how to play a guitar. I mean, yeah, put your fingers here and do this, but there's so many people that can do it differently with more style, more finesse, and their own kind of avenue of doing that individual thing. So you have to really work with him on that to teach him what place is. And then, but that'll take you like a week in itself. And then you develop up from that and you continue to get better as you go.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to do this because I don't want to confuse him. When I trained with him before, mm-hmm. when we did break, it was okay.
Yep.
And then he would know that was his time. But I want to introduce break because that's, you know, that definitely is, you know, a command that, you know, is way different from okay.
Yeah, and all you have to do is just say it the same and he'll get it.
Okay.
So all you have to say is break like that and he'll understand it. He'll just pop off.
Do you recommend those pallets that you use? The ones that are on, you know, real short legs? Do you know what I'm talking about?
The cots, the elevated cots?
Yes.
Yeah, we recommend them because dogs really like being on that elevated area. So that's why we use those, and they're easy for us to clean. So I recommend them because I think it's comfortable for dogs. I think they like it. So it's up to you. I mean, you could start right now you can go and grab a towel from the bathroom and get it done too. But you just have to have something different than the ground. That's all.
Well, I definitely wanted to check on those elevated cots because they appear to be, or I would think they would be cooler for dogs.
They are. Yeah. Especially
in the Rotties do not like to be hot.
Yeah. So yeah, especially in the hot weather, it's nice for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. How do I get him to? Well, this brings me back to one of the videos I watched with you, mm-hmm. and you had said to a woman who was handling her dog mm-hmm. that the problem was that she was loving him too much. Mm-hmm. And not being like a leader. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Probably every video that I've put out.
Well, you know, I'm afraid I'm in that category.
Yeah.
You know, because I've always felt bad for him because people are so afraid of him and he's always been very sweet and gentle with me.
Yeah.
And so I do things like every day, at least once a day, I give him like muscle massages.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to tell you, I have never given treat rewards to the dogs. You know, it's all like verbal and mm-hmm. touch. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to use treats?
No, I don't think it matters. I mean, treats is kind of like, again, another tool to the trade, right? I mean, treats, look at it like some people bring a different knife to the kitchen than others. Like, dude, it's really up to you. It's preference. Treats is just a added thing in the toolbox, and some people use them and some people don't.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be the pinnacle of everything. So it's really up to, okay. to you.
But he's, the Fritz, the one I'm talking about, mm-hmm. is 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So he can be a handful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never given him treats because I don't want him to gain more weight because he's already huge.
Yeah, you could just say good boy or good heel or good down or good stay. It's fine.
Okay. Okay. And so what is your recommendation for not loving them too much and starting to be a leader?
Well, exactly that, I think, is you would turn down that love and turn up the leadership. So
okay.
some of the worst cases of I specialize in behavior modification and
right.
working with dogs with behavioral problems from all over the world. That's my thing. That's what I do. And
right.
some of the worst cases I've ever seen are dogs who have gotten too much love and not enough discipline and leadership because they are losing their ever-loving minds, losing it. They literally will go insane because especially when you get a guardian type dog, like a Rottweiler, is everything that they have innately or naturally as a guardian breed is heightened because now they have to protect everybody. So
yeah.
the way that dogs interact with people is very clear. Now you're going to get many, 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 many different variables of different dogs.
Right.
You're going to get the dog that goes over to everybody with their tail wagging and their ears back and their head kind of chin up, like smiling, like I can't wait to be pet by you. And they just could have they could give two shits who's what and who's where and where they're at, as long as somebody's giving them love and attention.
Yeah.
And they don't have a mean bone in their body and they don't need a lot of training. They're very unicorn. You could train them some basic stuff, right? You know, some leash pressure and some stuff. And but a lot of people don't bring me those dogs, right? Because I'm a problem solver, right? It's like the
yeah.
mechanic. Nobody's going to bring me something unless it's broke. So, or if it's acting up. So for me, like I said, when I deal with these dogs that have these quirks and these behavioral issues and these things that people want to modify or change,
yeah,
a lot of it, and that's why when you asked about the, you watched a video of me telling somebody they're giving their dog too much love, that essentially means typically like when a dog walks into a room and they bark and they lunge and somebody's at the door and they freak out, that's because
right.
they, what else do you want them to do, right? So this is exactly what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Where you want your dog to do something they've never seen, heard, or done ever in their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
So when they act up or they do something that you don't like or they go off and bark and do whatever, you don't have any control, right?
No.
So
no.
that, so you get a dog that looks at you and goes, you have no idea what you're doing. I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to respect you. I'm not going to take direction from you. I'm not mm-hmm. going to take orders from you. You don't tell me what we do. I do things. You don't. Sit back, relax,
yeah.
enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And that's the ride you're on with them.
It is.
And so that's where dogs start to get overprotective. An instinctual primal instinct for like a very guardian type dog, shepherd, Rottweiler, whatever.
Yeah.
Mastiff. It's, you know, whatever. they if nobody in the room or in the household is waving their hands saying like, "Hey, I'm in charge, we're good," they will they will do it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is you don't have any control. So when somebody comes to the door, there's no question on who's going to the door to protect the house, because you're certainly not.
Right.
That's what they're thinking, right? And then you're
exactly.
And then you're scrambling, pulling back. You know, voices are probably heightened, and it's a very stressful thing.
Oh, it is.
Right.
It is.
So
it's awful.
Exactly, because you don't have a game plan, or you don't have any foundation to build off of. So it would be like if crisis struck in a situation or in a company or in the country or in the business and nobody had a game plan, it would be chaos. And that's what it is every single day at your house. So oftentimes what people do, like you just said, is you're like, well, I love my dog and I feel bad for my dog that other people think they're scary, so I give them more attention. So you're literally saying like, I really don't want a fire, but you're stoking it and throwing wood on it and gas on it. Man, I really don't want this fire going. And then you're just, boop, another log, can of gas. Because your dog is out there walking down the street, doing whatever, and all of a sudden they start reacting, and then you're rewarding the dog. Not only are you rewarding the behavior you don't like, but you're also telling the dog, please save me, please help me, please, I can't handle this, I can't handle this world. And of course, the Roddy's like, okay, sit in the back seat and please be quiet and feed me when we get home. So you guys are roommates, right? There's no real relationship, right? And so that's exactly what happens. And those are the worst cases that I have to deal with, is people come in either carrying their dogs in their hand or getting dragged in, you know. And if you look at a dog, and you can just tell immediately like where the lines are. I mean, there's just no control. I do what I want when I want. I'll let everybody know. And Roddies are no joke. They're some of the hardest breeds to work with in the world. They're the one of the toughest dogs, right? And they're not good dog owners for people who aren't ready to say, hey, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
And I think people get confused about what that means. I think people get a misunderstanding of what in charge means and what respect means. I think people just assume that in charge means your dog should be afraid of you when you walk in the room, and that's terrible sounding and not even close to true. I think if you ask, it's the same thing with kids or like the workplace, right?
Yeah.
Like there's a respect for the person in charge, and they're in charge for a reason. Somebody appointed them. They've been doing it a lot longer. They know what to do. That's, you know, like imagine if we were all on the same page. We're not. We're not all on the same page. Other people have different strengths and weaknesses, and they're appointed to be in charge for a reason.
Right? That makes sense.
So you have to make sure that when you're dealing with 150-pound bodyguard, and you're like, right? And there's just no control. And then you're rewarding the dog because people think he's grumpy. It's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Yeah. But it's not.
People think he's more than grumpy.
Right. I'm just being nice. But my point is, if you think it's bad, imagine how he feels to live his life the way that he does every day, constantly on guard, like the Secret Service. And he doesn't.
I think it would be horrible.
It's horrible. It's horribly stressful for him.
Yes. Yeah, that would be awful. Now I'm feeling really bad for him again.
Well, what you don't want to do when you feel bad for a dog because of the circumstances that you did is go give him love, because that's what makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want love. He wants leadership. He's like, does anybody in this house have any idea what they're doing? No. Okay. I guess I'll keep handling it. I don't want to, but I will, you know? And that's the thing, is like, there are some dogs too who do want to, and they'll overthrow you. Like the Cane Corsos, like those are infamous breeds for just like, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I handle it? And Rotties too. I mean, and I think that's what I mean. It's like, I don't really get too, I mean, there are dogs who have certain traits that are pretty consistent, right? Or just,
yeah,
you know, consistent across the board of being protective or bossy and, you know, but like I said, not every Rottie is the same, but I'm just saying generally speaking. So you have a dog that's out of control, right? So, but again, like if we go back to our first kind of conversation of my dog goes crazy when people come over and wants to eat people, I'm like, okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. What do you want him to do? Well, I want him to go to his place and lay down. I'm like, okay, you know, does he know it? He's like, yeah, no. So that's what I mean, is you got to pull back and start working on the things that you want him to do. And then you have to build it up for that reality.
Absolutely. What do I do about my husband?
I don't know.
I mean, my husband, I said, I don't think you like Fritz. And he said,
yeah.
He said, I think Fritz is really, really scary.
Yeah, well, I think it's a protective thing. Honestly, like it's hard to say. Like I said before, I've had Rotties the same way. Like I've had certain Rottweilers, and I don't want to say it's a Rottie thing, but I have had certain Rottweilers that I've worked with where if you don't really assert yourself as somebody who's you don't have to be like in charge. You just have to be confident. Because they eat up. Sometimes they'll just eat up a weak soul. They just do. I've seen it like firsthand. I've seen dog owners come in terrified of their own dog, and then it's hard to
That's
kind of
sad.
Yeah, it is, and like I said, I mean, it's not just one Rottie. I've seen it in several Rotties where they're looking at you like, I'm gonna test you, and literally if you don't do the things you need to do, this is my game. And they look at you and then they'll test you or they'll try to do something or they'll try to intimidate you or whatever. And they, you got to be careful. So I think but again, it's like if nobody's in charge and you have three different dogs and one of them is a very big, powerful 150-pound male and nobody's putting this dog into like real, real training. I know you said you've been training him. If you've been training him since he was that old, either your training that you're doing with this person is not working or you guys aren't following through or both, because a dog that's been training for 2 years straight should be able to drive a car to the store and get bread and come back. You know? So,
yeah, I agree with you. I'm obviously not doing something right. Fritz is my dog because my husband considers him my dog and I do too. And I'm obviously not doing what I need to be doing. And I don't want people to be afraid of him. And I live on these 5 acres of, you know, woods and a stream and I can't let him out. Mm-hmm. He has a fenced-in kennel because I'm afraid if somebody comes up the driveway or pulls up to the house that he's going to attack him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a quarantine puppy, so we really couldn't socialize him,
mm-hmm.
you know, get him around a lot of people. And because we're back where we are, we're really isolated. So, you know, we see delivery people and things like that. And I don't know how to socialize him in this environment.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even be focusing on the socialization part. Like, you just don't have any control.
Yeah, just do the training.
Yeah. Like, you know, like what you're, and here's what I'm hearing is we have a 5 acre nice plot of land with a beautiful stream, which is like perfect for a dog,
right?
And I won't do the training, so he has to sit in his kennel.
Yeah,
that's what's happening.
Pretty much you're exactly right.
So again, like, you're not going to be able to socialize him because, you know, from the circumstances that are given, you know, if you live in an area that doesn't get a high amount of people coming over, then regardless of if it's the pandemic or World War III, you're still not going to be able to get socialization. It's not like you live in Manhattan where you can go outside and see 100 people in 15 minutes. You have to realize, like, all right, we can say, yeah, okay, it's a pandemic puppy, but again, like, you saying that you live in a 5-acre parcel kind of off the beaten path, you're still not going to get a bunch of socialization anyway. But regardless, your training should always go over what happens. The dog, you're never going to be able to change the instinctual protective drive of the Rottweiler when somebody comes to your house. But if you have good control over your dog and you have good obedience, then you're going to be able to handle the situation appropriately.
Yeah. So that's where wonderful.
Yeah. And that's where it comes back down to is control. Like, there is no easy way to put it. 150-pound male Rottweiler is a liability. Like, regardless of how nice and friendly and sweet they are, they're still such a massive, like, force to be reckoned with. I mean, they're like little Volkswagens running around your property.
Yeah.
With teeth.
Yeah.
So then you get them to be really protective and not listening, then it becomes even more of a liability. I think all dogs are liabilities just in general. Like, you know, they're animals, right? You never know. And like I said, some of them are like, oh no, this is a, you know, think about insurance. That every single person, well, I shouldn't say that, 97% of people have health insurance because it's like, yeah, even though you're the healthiest person in the world, shit happens. Like, things can happen, right? So dogs are no different. I mean, they're animals. There's still a risk of something happening. And your insurance should be your control, your e-collar training, your on-leash training, your off-leash training. I mean, how much control do you have? So if you have a dog that has a more likelihood to have a higher, let's say, probability of having an accident or having something happen because of their just genetics, then you better have better liability, which is your control. And if you don't have that, then if something happens, then you're ultimately going to be pinned for it. So
exactly.
And then you're going to, you think you feel bad now because people look at your dogs funny because they're looking scary, right? Imagine what's going to happen when you tell your dog to come back when he's chasing the mailman and bites somebody, you have to put him down. Or they take him and they put him in quarantine for 2 weeks in the shelter by himself where he can't even turn around in the room. Then you're going to feel even worse.
I would die.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to, people don't realize that you're killing them literally with kindness if you don't step up. And again, it's not the opposite of kindness is being mean. What it is it's leadership and structure and boundaries. And so what does that look like? That means putting him on a leash and holding him accountable every day until he listens to you. Yeah. That's like the most basic real information and guidance I can give anybody is put that dog on a leash, ask him to sit and stay and break him through every threshold, do recall training with him, teach him new things. Okay. You have to really, if there was one word, it would be accountability. Right now, if you ask him to do something, he's going to look at you like, what are you going to do about it if I don't? Especially if there's something else going on.
Oh, exactly. And there's a lot going on here.
Exactly. So he's never going to, so he's not listening. Yeah. So there you go. So you have a huge responsibility that if you have three dogs running around the house and multiple of them are over 100 pounds and one of them is a liability to a bigger degree, then you really have to make sure that you have really good control. So you have to go back. You have to go back down to the basics of teaching the dogs what you want them to do. Because right now, it's not even when my dogs do this, I want them to do this and they don't. It's when my dogs do this, I'm asking them to do something or I want them to do something they've never even seen before. The picture has never been drawn for them. They've never heard it.
Yeah. I think Fritz was introduced to Place at the boarding place that he went to, but I didn't follow through. That was my fault.
Yeah.
He does. I mean, he's always getting up on the couch with me. So, I mean, I could make that his place, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't recommend the couch being the place, because that's going to put you, that's what's going to put your husband or anybody else at kind of that risk.
Okay.
Right. So if you're on the couch and he's on the couch and he knows that you have no, zero control, and your husband comes up, and your husband's already a little bit afraid of him.
Yeah, he is.
He's already wrote him off by him saying, hey, he's your dog, not mine. That's him saying, like, I don't want anything to do with that dog, typically.
Pretty much.
Right? So then what you have to do is you have to realize that if he's sitting next to you on the couch and then your husband comes up, well, then you're making your husband a target.
Yeah.
So.
And that's when he does growl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's telling your husband, hey, see this girl sitting next to me? She's mine, not yours. Walk away, buddy. Take a hike. And then you're sitting there like petting him like, oh, it's, yeah, keep doing it. You know?
So I am petting him and I'm saying, it's okay. Don't growl. No growl.
So that, you know what that means to him?
What?
Protect me, please. I have no idea what I'm doing. You're just keep digging that grave, really. It's dogs don't understand English, right?
So if he's
sitting there doing something and you're touching him and giving him affection and talking to him, you're telling him, yeah, buddy, get that guy out of here. Growl deeper, growl harder, bite him harder when he comes close.
Yeah.
You've told him over and over and over again that this is a great idea. I want you to really go after this guy if he gets close.
That makes me feel horrible.
Well, you just, it's the truth. It's the absolute truth. However,
it is truth.
However, you have to really understand just how things work. And like I said, that's, you're reinforcing behaviors that you don't like, because you're so remember when you asked me about, like, when I was telling a dog owner to turn the love down, is because you're treating him like a human being and he's not. He's a killer. He would go outside and kill the cute little rabbits that bounce around in the yard and eat rabbit poop and, like, just savage, right? So when he's sitting on your couch, death growling your husband, and you're touching him and saying, yeah, buddy, good job. Get that bad guy, right? Well, then, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And then your husband's going to keep getting, you know, distance and distance and distance. And I don't blame him. So he shouldn't He shouldn't be on the couch. And you should have different relationship with him, that if he does growl at anybody, that he's getting corrected and held accountable for that. And that's just what you're not doing right now.
No.
So going back to what we were saying in the beginning, when you're like, oh, I heard you say, you know, you're giving your dog too much love and attention. And that's the exact example of that.
It is. And I do not want him to, you know, try to attack my husband or growl at him or anything like that. I also don't want him to go after my husband if he corrects the puppy.
Right. So
because he's very protective over the puppy. The puppy is actually his brother from a different litter.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very protective over him.
Yeah. Well, again, like when you, so if look at your household, right? You have your husband, you have you have the three dogs. And let's just say you guys are all even with each other and all of you have a string on you attached to your shirt, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Okay. right now, if I were to say, hey, everybody in this group, who makes the rules? I know Fritz is going to go, whoop, he's going to rise above everybody real quick. I don't know about the other dogs.
But, no, he will.
Right? So it doesn't matter if it's growling at your husband for correcting the puppy, or you got to realize Fritz makes the rules.
Yeah.
So I don't care if you overcook the spaghetti, Fritz is going to say, hey, cook it again. It's his house. You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter. Like,
I do.
Don't go so singular too much. Just realize that anything that Fritz doesn't like, he's going to let you know about it. So it's not a question of why does Fritz care that my husband corrects the puppy? It's because Fritz makes the rules. So it we can sit here all day and say, like, what is Fritz going to care about? What he's not going to care about? Why does he care about this more? That shouldn't even be the question. The question is your dog is now predicating how your humans react in your house, which is horrible to everybody.
So I have to start at the beginning and start all over again with obedience.
Correct. Because the obedience is going to help develop your relationship, right? So the way that dogs interact with people is through, again, like, they don't speak English. You can't sit down and say, hey, let's have a conversation. You have to go out and talk to them on the leash. You have to go out, get them on a leash. Hey, let's go this way. Nah, I don't want to go. Bang, correction. Whoa, really? Right? Those are the types of things that set the tone immediately, especially for dogs like this. Right. So when we talk about different types of training styles, different ideologies, different teams, if you will, of positive only and punishment and however you want to describe it, you have a dog like Fritz and then you use positive reinforcement only, which is encouraging behaviors. It would be a nightmare,
which is what I've been doing.
Right. Which is why you're at where you're at. I worked with a puppy a couple months ago where this is a terrible, gutted, gross story only by behavioral circumstances. I had this girl reach out to me and she said, hey, I have a service dog puppy that I'm raising. It's like a really nice dog and mm-hmm. I need help. And I ended up meeting with her at my facility. And yeah. I said, what's the deal? She said, well, here's the puppy. He's 7 months old and he's a nightmare. He's all over the place. He's jumping. He's pulling. I can't walk him. I'm supposed to be raising this puppy for service dog work and I can't bring him in public. And when I do, I want to pull my hair out and I want to let him go. And I said, okay, what's the deal? How's the training going? Well, so she gets out and this dog drags her all the way down the road, all the way down
the
front parking lot. And I'm like, okay. So I said, well, it was like a 60 pound dog probably. And just pulling and pulling. My point is I said, well, you're on a martingale collar. I said, you need to go to something else because this dog is going to outrun you. She goes, oh, I can't. The organization won't let me use anything but a martingale.
Oh, really?
And I said, well, are you a professional handler or trainer? No. I said, okay, well, you're screwed. I said,
yeah,
so
really?
I ended up using the prong collar. She's like, no, we can use it. I just, you know, and I ended up using it. And this dog tuned up in 2 seconds. And it was the night.
Wow.
And we got it. We can't post it, but we got it on film. It's amazing. And this dog was so, I wanted to take this dog home with me, which is saying a lot. I loved this dog. Such a stud of a dog. Very, very, very nice dog. My point by saying that is there's some dogs who are not going to do well with being, you give them an inch, guess what? They take the whole 3 freaking miles, right?
Right.
And so that's what Fritz is, right? It's the same thing as this dog. And so my point is there's different ends of the spectrum. You're going to get a service dog that loves everybody, that wants to kiss everybody, that you could let go into a preschool and he'd be laying on his back, you know, peeing on himself with excitement. And then, but it's a nightmare still for the, it's just as much of a nightmare for the owner as it is for you. You're just on the other end of the spectrum. And what helps and or stops and or corrects this is giving the dog some sort of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like with you, right? So this other dog was pulling this owner down the road, couldn't do anything with the dog, but a beautiful dog, right? And same, but she couldn't hold the dog accountable.
Yeah.
She couldn't teach the dog that it was wrong. And same thing with you, same thing with Fritz. When Fritz does this, you have no accountability. So that's what you have to do, is you have to get back to, again, and the way that I kind of frame this isn't really fair for anybody when I say you're giving the dog too much love, because then what I think people just think the contrary of love is, you know, fear or whatever. It's not. It's just accountability and structure. If you don't.
And I did get that from your video.
Cool.
You know, I didn't think it was, you know, the opposite.
Good. That's what you have to do, is you have to start holding this dog accountable to some degree. And so, yeah, equipment is going to help. Definitely with a 150-pound dog, you're not going to be walking around with a freaking string or harness, because you're doomed. So you're going to get a prong collar. You're going to start doing some directional changes. And these are the types of things that I'm talking about. Is you come out on the leash and you say, hey, Fritz, we're going to go this way. And you say heel or come or let's go or whatever your cue is.
Yeah.
Fritz says, please be quiet. I'm going this way. You know, just a nice way to say, shut up. Oh, what's the... So, and then, boom, they get corrected with the prong collar. And they get that pressure. And then the dog turns around and looks at you. And you say, hey, let's go. And they go, oh, okay. So for the first time in the dog's life, you held them accountable for what you wanted. So that's where confidence comes in, right? So when we talk about your dog growling and going after people when they come in, they may not have confidence in you. Because you say, hey, Fritz, let's go this way. He goes, yeah, hold on. Yeah, hold on.
Yeah.
Constantly. Yeah, give me a minute. So there's no, you know, but then you see some parenting that's like, hey, do this. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Got it. Done. Consider it done. No problem. They take it very seriously. Why? Because there's accountability. There's respect. There's structure, right? If you just ask your kid, just like your dog, hey, I want you to do this. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. Homework. Yeah, tomorrow. Clean up your dishes. Yeah, tomorrow. Get to school on time. Maybe next year. Just constantly pushing and pushing and pushing. So then your relationship is that, right? It's just, hey, I want you to do something. Nah, nope.
Mm-mm. Exactly.
And that's where the accountability comes in. So what do you do with a 150-pound dog? Well, you don't use a harness. You don't use your voice. You hold them accountable. If you say, hey, I want you to come, and you're on the leash and they don't, you correct them for that. And they go, oh, shit, sorry. And they come to you. You say, no, because that's where, this is where the rubber meets the road for you, is I think before, or even maybe now, you're like, oh, well, I don't want to, like, he wants to go do this or he wants to go do that. And that's kind of that other humanizing type of thing that I was talking about earlier about giving the dog too much love, where if you go right and you say Fritz heel and he goes left and he gets corrected, and then he gets upset and, you know, you're like, oh, I'm sorry, right? No, that shouldn't be like that. You asked him to do something and he didn't do it, and that's a problem. Now, why is it a problem on the big scale? It's a problem on the big scale because if you have somebody over and you say, Fritz, I want you to place and stay, everything, that's where everything comes in.
Yeah.
Like if you're an athlete and you're terrible in practice, and you can't do anything that you need to do, and you can't run the drills, you're not going to get played because you're not good enough for the game. And that's why you have to take training very seriously when nobody's around. When you ask a dog to do something, don't just ask them because it's – yeah, I see that all the time. People say, come. And the dog's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. Well, that's damaging to your relationship to a very big degree, because you just asked your dog to do something, whatever that is. They said no, and you said okay. So now copy and paste that. Here's the equation. Asking your dog to do something, what does your dog do? If your dog doesn't listen, don't be upset or frustrated that your dog doesn't listen when you need him to.
Yeah, I've gotten upset with him a couple of times. And he takes it really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say upset, it's just basically not showing him all the attention and love that I usually do.
Mm-hmm. Tough life, right?
Yeah, it is. How often should I work on the training aspect? Because I know dogs get stressed and they get fatigued.
Well, just I would just do it for like 10 minutes throughout the day, as often as you can.
Okay. And that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Think about it like this. The way that your training needs to be right now is you have two different avenues. The first avenue is you have to teach him what you want him to do. So when reality hits, recall's good, place and stay are good, leave it's good, heel's good. There's that. But again, there's a bigger picture of you flipping the role and teaching him that you know what you're doing. And when you ask him to do something, you're going to hold him accountable. Right now, if you ask him to do something and he doesn't do it, you're like, maybe later. That's why he is the way he is. Every single dog that are like this, there's the same variable of the person trying to figure out, it's the same thing. It's like clockwork. So that's what you have to really focus on.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. He has made himself the leader of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, I need to start all over and teach him that, you know, I have accountability and, you know, I'm the leader.
Yeah. And just by very, very, very basic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He outweighs me by like 50 pounds, which is tough. But like I said, he's very, very obedient on the leash. So, that's a good thing.
Yeah. So you got to keep him on the leash for a while.
Yeah. I'll keep him on the leash all the time if I need to.
Mm-hmm. And then you start transferring, you know, to other things.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you recommend that slip leash that you use? Because I've seen you use it like every time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I do. I just think he's too powerful for you in that. Like that's like if you get a slip leash. So there's different forms of pressure. And again, every single dog is different. Every handler is different. And every environment is different. So you have three different things kind of coming into play when you're talking about working with the dog and handling the dog. And you have to make sure that, do I have a dog that can outpower me if they want to? Yes. Do I have a piece of equipment that can overpower my dog when they try to outpower me? And that's where the consequences comes in. Some dogs are very, 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 let's say, sensitive or aware to leash pressure. And that little pop, that little pop that you do, they go, whoa. Typically, they're smaller dogs, medium to small dogs.
Okay.
So if he decided to overpower you and you lose leverage, you kind of go back to square one. Because you said, hey, do this. And he's like, do I have to? Pulls through your correction. You pull back. He's like, yeah, I don't give a shit about this.
Yeah.
And then if you use something with more surface pressure, like a prong collar, then it's going to give you more leverage and ultimately it's going to be safer. Like I was telling you with that service dog, that dog not only was dragging his owner all over the place, they couldn't actually work on service dog stuff because of the regulations from the company saying, no, train it with this flat collar. And it was unsafe for the dog because the dog was choking himself out.
Oh, geez.
So that's why the prong collar and the slip collar and some applications. So my point is I'm gonna say no to you. I would say the prong collar is going to be better. But that doesn't mean that it always has to be the prong. It just means you have a novice handler with a very giant big, powerful, 150-pound, massive, muscly dog. So I'm going to give you the highest control, which would be the prong collar, which you should probably get like a 3.0 Herm Springer prong collar with a safety clip and a 4-foot training leash.
Okay, because I wondered, you had said a 2.0 with one of the
people. 2.25 is the 2.25 is the typical like smaller prong collar, but you're going to get the 3.0 or the 3.2.
Okay, you had said that you prefer the smaller prongs because it has a better surface area.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still the same with him?
No, he's too big, and you have to your timing has to be really, 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 really good in order to like use that effectively on that big of a dog.
Okay. So a 3.0 or a 3.2?
Correct.
Can do. Not a problem.
And we have I think we have the 3.2 or the 3.0 Kurrigans on our website.
Oh, do you?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Do you have those place tops on your website?
No, we don't, unfortunately. But you can get those off Chewy or Amazon.
Okay. I'll look for that. Now, can I bring up a different dog?
Sure.
Okay. Zeus is my German Shepherd. He's small for a shepherd. And he is extremely timid. But he can get in some vicious fights with the other two.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where with Fritz, he actually lost a canine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not... Okay, for one thing, I have a daughter that turned 41 yesterday that mm-hmm. is severely disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she makes a sound, she can't talk or anything like that, he goes insane and jumps up on my lap or on the back of the couch. Or, I mean, I don't know how to desensitize him because she's always going to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to desensitize him to the sound of her voice. And how to get him under control with that.
Well, how much control do you have?
Zip.
There you go. So I set you up for that. But, I mean, it's the same thing, right? We'll talk mm-hmm. We'll talk about it really in a second. But it's the same thing. My dog is reacting to X, whatever X is. Squirrels, dogs, kids,
okay.
Mailman, whatever. My dog is reacting to X. I need to control
gotcha.
It. Okay, then I come back to say, well, how much control do you have? And then you say, none. I say, well, you can't control your dog with nothing going on. How are you going to control your dog with X?
Makes absolute sense.
So you have to go back. Now, let's say you had great control. Let's say your obedience was great. Let's say Zeus place downstay. Got it. Okay?
Yeah.
Then what you would do is you would understand to say, like, especially with dogs, some dogs really don't like, they don't like some noises. Like, especially, let's just say, like, some dogs don't like kids or some dogs don't like certain people because their mannerisms and how they move and how they talk and whatever. It doesn't matter. Again, don't focus so much on, like, why, Zeus? It's my daughter, right? Just say, okay, he doesn't like X. So how can you counter X? And again, if I turn around and say, hey, how's your, we don't have anything. We got nothing. So it's, I want my dog to behave and be very well-mannered under these circumstances, but I haven't taught my dog how to behave. That's the equation. They cancel each other out. You know what I mean? Like if you came in to my facility and you said, hey, I want my dog to act like this and stop doing this. And I said, okay, How much work have you put in, and how much does your dog understand with you? Zero. So, okay, well, we got to start there and come back in a couple months and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But that's the reality, is you got to have control. A lot of people think, out of all the conversations that I have with people, is it's kind of mechanical almost, where they're like, I have a problem, how do I turn it off?
Yeah.
It's just not like that. It's a development. It's the same thing as wanting to get into the best shape of your life. And you call a personal trainer, you call a nutritionist or whatever, right? Or you call the gym. And you're like, yeah. Hey, I want to lose 50 pounds by next week. What do I need to do? And it's like, well, that doesn't work like that. Like, you got to build that up. You got to build that. And it's the same thing with people too. Like, as a human or as a person, right, walking the earth, it's not like you can come up, hey, trust me. I don't know. Just trust me. Well, you have to work on everything in life. It doesn't just happen, right? So especially when we're talking about behavioral work. Now, there's a significant difference between behavioral work and obedience, right?
Yeah.
So that's what you need to do, is you need to work on both. You need to work on the obedience to help the behavior, right? And so there's thousands and thousands of dog trainers out there that are really great at obedience. They're like, look what I can do, the flashy heels and the placing and doing all, and that's great, but that's not going to help the majority of people out there that are having problems with their dog. That's just going
to... Yeah, because he's been trained, you know, as much as Fritz, mm-hmm. and can go through the obedience commands and everything else.
Exactly. So there's two things I want to add to that, is it doesn't matter what your dog can do with obedience unless you can actually do it in reality, right?
Yeah.
So you have to make sure, like what I specialize in is behavior. So I don't go out there and say, look, give me your dog and look what I can do. I say, hey, this is the problem you're having with your dog, and here's how I'm going to help you make it better. And if you don't put in the work, it's not going to get better, period. So that's where you have to start putting in the work. And you also have to make sure that you spent so much money on training already, you got to really tap into that core training, because it's the same thing with our board and train program. We tell people all the time, we are just getting your dog to a point where they're doing the things that you want them to do for us. But we didn't just train a computer so when you take it home, it's going to act the same.
Yeah.
So that's not how it works. Your dog is going to listen to us because we're professionals, and we just gave your dog a crash course of training that they've never had over the last 2 months or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, and now you have to take the torch and get it done. So, again, like, if your dog has the foundation, that's great, because a lot of the hard work is out of the way, but now what you have to do is you have to go back in and say, okay, now I can do this. So.
Exactly. And, you know, to be honest, after they were trained, I worked with them and worked with them. And then at some point, I figured they know what they're supposed to do, and I got lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, you know, some of the problems arose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. they're like little children.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to constantly be on it.
Yeah.
And training.
Exactly. And again, it's just like with people. Like, think about literally anything that you want to do. Your writing skills, your running skills, whatever. Anything that you do. If you get to like peak performance where you're like, "Oh, this is I'm doing great." And then you start to regress, which is natural. Everybody regresses. Dogs regress too. You're not in that, you know, same thing with a boarding train. It's like driving a car off the lot, brand new car off the lot. It automatically is going to regress and depreciate. It just is what it is. So when we bring a dog through training and they're training every single day with a professional handler, and the timing is good and everything's good, as soon as we hand that leash off to the owner, it's going to regress immediately because they're not the same. So with you... You've got that foundation. You just have to go back through. And what I would do is get the dogs out individually.
That's what I was going to ask you. Individually.
Get them out individually and work with them on these things and take your time. Do 10 minute sessions with each of them. and just rotate them. And then once you feel really good with them, then start bringing them in together.
Okay.
I haven't taken the puppy, Teddy, through any kind of training yet.
Mm-hmm.
He does know sit, stay, and down. Okay. But obviously I've got to teach him a lot more.
Yeah.
And I want him picking up bad habits from Fritz or Zeus. So I obviously need to really train. Well, I mean, he's 9 months old and he's already 95 pounds.
Yep.
You know, so he's going to be a big, powerful dog. And I'm going to need to get some control over him.
Yeah, it's exactly like the same thing that we were talking about before with the other dogs, is it's not going to be, you know, you can add four more dogs to the mix and it's like, oh, I'm having all these problems. And it's the foundation work. It's all it is. It gets back down to the foundations. How much work are you doing with them individually and how much do they know?
Yeah. And that makes sense. We raised the Siberian Husky puppy with Zeus. They were the same age. And my granddaughter had taken him. And apparently, she's kind of abandoned him.
Okay.
So we're going to be taking him back into the house.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to do the same thing with, I, as far as I know, he's never had training.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to do the same thing.
Yep. Yeah, it's the same thing. But, you know, Huskies are one of the harder breeds to train in the world.
Oh, heck yes.
So
we've had Huskies.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so it's the same thing. Is you got all these dogs and you know, really what it comes back down to is how much work you're putting in. It's not going to be let's wait it out and see what happens type thing. It's going to be, you know, assertive boots on the ground. Let's figure this out.
Well, I'm going to have to start rotating them individually.
Yep.
And I've got a lot of work to do before that happens.
Yep.
Well, I really, really thank you for this. I really do.
Yeah, no worries. No problem at all. It's my pleasure to help. I hope it does help, and I hope that you can, you know, really work on it moving forward.
It'll help, and I'll email you with the progress.
Okay, that sounds good.
Well, thank you so much, and I'll keep watching your videos.
All right, thank you. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast where I'm going to be answering your dog training questions. If you guys want me to answer your specific dog training questions, super simple. All you have to do is head on over to the iTunes podcast review column under this show and leave your review and a question. It's the only way you can really ask me things here. All right, this comes in. Appreciate your dialogue, Missy and Pups. I have an anxious Husky Shepherd who is turning 2, and we have worked hard on finding resources for training him because we love this dog. He's sweet, but has some mental health issues that are very genetic based. We know mama, dog, that's a whole other story. I appreciate when you talk to people and go, let's look at maybe why the discussion of the genetics being a factor. It's very matter of fact, and it's factored in to be figured all that stuff out. I had a trainer tell me that our boy was genetically broken and we should just sequence him out from everyone and everything forever. But he was a balanced dog trainer and never met my dog. And it's been hard emailing back and forth. So we've been trying to get a hold of him. So hearing you acknowledge that genetics are a contributing factor and continue to go through the different layers and how to deal with stuff is really refreshing to me. Thank you. If you happen to know any balanced dog trainers in Washington State, let me know. You know, it's interesting. Washington's one of the states that I get requested for the most. It's also one of the it is the state that I get asked about balanced dog trainers in general, because it sounds like it's very, very, very polluted with positive only trainers, which again, as you guys know, is very limited to what they can do. So it's unfortunate, but I don't know anybody off the top of my head, but we will be out there this fall. All right, the next one comes from Otter Ball. Excellent educational podcast. Love the podcast, especially the segments with Force Mickey. It's helped me and my dog so much. Question for you. I live in the Southwest and do a lot of off-leash hiking with rattlesnakes in their habitat. Because my dogs can't be quite far from me at times, I'm interested in rattlesnake aversion training. I have an 11-year-old lab, not e-collar trained, and a 1-year-old plot hound started e-collar conditioning. Do you have any advice on appropriate e-collar levels and creating lasting aversion? Would you approach it differently from a dog that has been e-collar conditioned or not, since I might not always be close to them if they can learn to avoid rattlers on their own? I don't have any content on this just because I don't do this type of training, and I kind of stay in my lane, as you guys know. So I don't have anything in particular that I can advise, although I would just really go... To answer one question out of this is the e-collar conditioning is going to be far different for the off-leash training as it is for the aversion training for the rattlesnake. So there's that. But I would highly suggest just looking. I know in Arizona they have a lot of people who do this type of training, so I'm not sure exactly where you're at. But I would just reach out to somebody. Like, even if they're not even in your state, I would reach out or email them and just say, like, hey, is there any content, or is there any things that I can look up to, you know, help me understand the things I need to be doing with this? And that's what I would do. Sorry. But yeah, I don't try to touch on anything I don't know about. Best dog training channel, trying my best. Tom, I've been watching your YouTube since my dog was a puppy. Your videos have helped us a lot, so thank you so much. I recently started listening to your podcast, and it's been very helpful. My dog is almost 3, and he started to show leash reactivity towards other dogs and people around 2.5. He is not always reactive. I've done a lot of obedience training, and I still continue, and the problem has showed up. And this problem showed up. He was nervous, submissive, but a friendly overall dog when he was a puppy, and now that he's more nervous and reactive. I found the trainer that will start board and train program. The trainer said he's not confident and anxious and has a bad relationship with me, meaning the dog. I didn't completely understand that problem until I myself listened to podcast number 83. My question is, do you think that some dogs need intensive or extensive training to fix the relationship with its owners? Does the training kind of reset the mindset? He's going for 10 weeks. This is a good question. I think it's good for dogs to reset and go and get the structure from a professional. However, if it is a problem solely based off of your relationship with the dog, then a lot of this is really going to be predicated on your relationship. So you should be spending more time with the actual dog and the trainer rather than, you know, giving the dog off for 10 weeks. So I think it's going to be good. I think you're going to see what your dog is capable of as far as obedience. But as we talked about in this particular podcast that you just listened to, there's a lot of things that you also have to make sure that you're aware of, that a dog boarding train program is simply to set the dog up for success and really make sure that the dog knows the things that the dog should know. But it's up to you to make sure that you actually follow through. So if you're doing all the same stuff and the dog goes back to you, it's only a matter of time before you regress back to where you were, unfortunately. So I would highly recommend that if you are going to work with this board and train trainer and whatever else you're doing, just really make sure that you're actually spending time with the trainer to teach you how to do the things. Because just because you spend a bunch of money and your dog spends 10 weeks at a board and train center does not mean that it's going to fix your relationship. That means that your dog is going to listen better to the trainers that are working the dog. So just keep that in mind. And all right, you guys, thanks for listening. I'll catch you Wednesday. So make sure you guys add your questions to the review charts. Let's get into it. All right, guys, talk to you. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.